Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ah, the elusive voting booth during municipal election cycles. Like this year, American voters can't seem to find it or fit it into their schedules when it comes to local elections. Even though City Hall has often a much greater impact on everyday lives, from taxes to garbage pickup, Columbus is no exception. Just over 9% of eligible voters in May participated in the mayoral primary. The May turnout, in fact, was about half that of the city's last mayoral primary in 1999, when Michael B. Coleman first ran for mayor. Turnout predictions for the general election, which pits Democrats Andrew Ginther and Zach Scott, aren't much better. Today, we're talking about the disconnect in voter turnout for local elections. Joining us by phone is political scientist at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, Aaron Weinschenk. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Also by phone is the Director of Strategy and Assessment at the Knight Foundation, John Sotsky. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks. Good morning.
First of all, voter turnout in general in the U.S. isn't anything to brag about, general election cycles or not. Right, Aaron Weinschenk? I mean, how do we compare with other similar democracies?
Yeah, I would say we're not doing particularly well. You know, if you look at midterm elections, it's usually, you know, in the 30% to 40% range. If you jump over to presidential elections, you know, you see a bump because of the high levels of attention. But still there, we're seeing, you know, upper 50s, maybe 60 occasionally. And, you know, you get other places, some of which have mandatory voting, where you see, you know, upwards of 90% of people participating. So relative to other places, probably not particularly well.
Is it something, John Sotsky, as simple as, or I guess as complex as, the fact that we're an older democracy and people sort of take it for granted?
Yeah, that's one possible explanation. I think another thing that comes out in some of the research that we've supported is people's lack of information about, especially at the local level, what local government is doing and how their vote affects policy. So we think information, or the lack thereof, is a key to declining local voting rates and how we can turn that around.
And is that lack of information from the candidates or what?
You know, it's people not being well informed about even the role of local government. And we think Knight Foundation has a history in newspapers, mm-hmm. and we support quality information in communities. And what we've seen over the last decade especially is a disruption of the business model and the news industry, and really cutbacks to the quantity and quality of local reporting. We think that decline in information availability might be driving this.
Aaron Weinschenk, when did local elections begin to break away from national cycles in terms of voting? Is it about what John Sotsky said? It has kind of parallels the business model for newspapers and how that's sort of disintegrating?
Yeah, I think that's definitely an important part of it. You know, if you go back in time and look at some of the bigger cities' turnout levels, you know, it was much higher than it is now. We just saw L.A. have record low turnout, New York City have record low turnout. And maybe it's because, you know, people don't know, or because they're not excited. But I think John was right on when he talked about the decline of newspapers. We know that there are fewer daily local newspapers now, and people need to have information about elections before they can participate in them. So I think that's right on.
And fewer local, and for a long time now, no, very few competing local newspapers.
Yeah, and I've seen studies that show, like, when you know, when a newspaper leaves an area or shuts down, that turnout rates decline in those cities. So I think it can be something that's a disruption to the kind of civic engagement that we see in a lot of places.
Because, John Sotsky, they're not even walking by a newspaper box and seeing something on the front of that.
That's right. That physical presence is gone. What's happened is a lot of news coverage is dedicated purely to national races. So whereas we're, you know, starting 2 years out, it seems like we were in full tilt presidential race coverage and primary coverage. It's that local story that can get lost. And as you put it, Ann, there's, you know, so much of what people experience in their day-to-day lives is actually governed by their cities and counties and states. So it's so important.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about why turnout in elections has gotten lower and lower and lower over the years. Historically, in Ohio, it was the lowest turnout in 72 years. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear what your thoughts are about why you don't vote. Let's hear from non-voters today, people who even might be registered to vote and don't vote. Why don't you vote? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And why don't you vote in local elections especially? That's what we're talking about today. You can check out our Facebook page and post your comment there as well. My guests, John Sotsky, he's Director of Strategy and Assessment at the Knight Foundation, and also Aaron Weinschenk, he's a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin in Green Bay. The Knight Foundation in June released the results of a study about the barriers and motivators for local voting, and it focused on millennials, those ages 20 to 34. Have younger voters lagged traditionally anyways, though, John Sotsky?
Yeah, younger voters have generally lagged other age groups when it comes to their voting. I think why it's so important thinking about young voters in cities is that young people are increasingly moving into cities. So we see just general migration trends into urban areas. So you have a greater population in conjunction with them, with local decline in voting rates, which Aaron's research has been so instrumental in pointing out at the city levels. And then you have they're lagging in terms of how often they participate. They're increasingly moving to cities, and we see just general decline. So I think we're looking at record lows for young folks who are participating in local elections.
And they're moving around a lot more, Aaron Weinschenk. A lot of us, well, not me, but I mean a lot of us grew up living and growing up in the cities where we were born or raised. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah, you see, you know, increasingly people moving into the suburbs, but I think there are a lot of places that are sort of coming back and are attracting a younger crowd. And I think John's right that it's important to get those people involved, and it's especially important to get them involved now. We know a lot about, you know, the socialization of people, and if you can get them involved in politics early, it tends to become a habit, and they tend to keep participating. So I think anything we can do to mobilize young people to show them how issues in the places that they're going to be living are connecting to their own lives is something that could be helpful.
And I'd add to that by saying that when we spoke to millennials in focus groups, those who were from the city where they were currently living in, so they were born and raised there, uh-huh, demonstrated far higher levels of or an inclination that they would participate in future elections versus those who had recently moved to the city. So really creating those ties and attachment, we think, is really vital for ultimately increasing civic engagement in voting.
Does any of this have to do with anything to do with how they're taught civics in school nowadays? Aaron Weinschenk?
I think from my understanding, civics is not necessarily taking center stage. You know, if I ask my students how many of you had a civics class, you know, maybe less than half of the class will say that they did. And I think it's great to have that kind of training in high school, but maybe we need to, you know, start it a little bit earlier and also make it more consistent. You know, a one-time civics class probably isn't going to do it. It needs to be reinforced over time. So I think that definitely is part of the story, that it needs to be taught more. It needs to be taught in ways that they can relate to, and it needs to be reinforced, you know, at multiple points throughout their careers.
Right, because John Sotsky, a lot of it is you mentioned they don't get the connection in the first place. They don't know who decides where the curb cuts will be and where there's going to be drainage tiles.
So we asked a lot of millennials about how local government affects their lives, and there was silence oftentimes in these focus groups. And then someone would raise their hand or speak up, and they would say, well, do schools count? Or do buses and transportation count? And we'd say, yeah, of course, that counts. But, you know, they had to pause to think about it, and just really educating people about all the ways that local government does influence their lives dramatically, and really touching on those issues, because a lot of millennials, they really care more about the issues than they do about the politics. In fact, we've seen just general declines in trust in government and really an alienation towards the political process, but really connecting this back to how voting can affect their lives and how local government can affect their lives will be a key to ultimately increasing their turnout at the polls.
So it might be interesting in Ohio, for example, to see what the turnout is because of issue three, which is the marijuana legalization proposal on the ballot, and how that might impact local election turnout, right? Aaron Weinstein, yeah?
Yeah, I think any kinds of those issues that are interesting or relevant to students or to younger people, I think, could be something that draws them in. But again, I think if it's just like a one-time deal, mm-hmm. you know, that might not be enough. You know, it might attract them for that moment, but it's got to be some consistent thing that continually happens, that continually draws them. And I think John made a good point when he talked about, like, being turned off of national politics. My students seem to hate, like, the conflict in national politics these days. So I think maybe pitching local politics as a place where we could, you know, get policy done where maybe there's less conflict potential could be another way of getting their interest.
When you're saying conflict potential, are you talking about negative campaigning?
I think they're turned off by negative campaigning, although research has shown that negative campaigning might actually mobilize people rather than demobilize them. Mm. I think they just don't like the gridlock. Mm. They don't like the bickering that they see between political leaders, and that kind of repels them away from national politics.
Yeah, I have to say, John Sotsky, I kind of grew up in a generation, I don't know about you guys, that where, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats certainly differed, but there wasn't the gridlock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that gridlock can be alienating. It can lead to that feeling of, what does my vote matter? Because ultimately, no matter who we put in office, it's just going to be gridlock. I think that's where the local elections have such promise, though, because I think there's a lot more. In many municipalities, folks aren't even they don't carry a Republican or a Democrat label. Voting happens without affiliation to party. I think there's a lot more sensibility and innovation that we're seeing at the city level that's encouraging and could be a really great modus operandi for getting folks engaged and seeing results of the process, even while Washington might continue to remain in gridlock.
Okay, I'm going to turn to a caller right now to wrap up this segment. Jeremy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. You're a millennial. You used to vote, but you used to not vote, and now you do. What changed?
Well, I think, and I'm on the older end of the millennials here, but mm-hmm. as I talk to my friends and in social circles, I think even the discussion itself can sometimes feel a little bit like pandering. Like, how do we get these kind of silly kids, I mean, of course you're not saying that, but how do we get these silly kids to care about something important? But as I discussed these, I mean, we care about zoning, we care about, you know, the things that affect our lives. We care about these things. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes the discussion can get taken down to, you know, marijuana or, you know, how do we get these kids who are on their couch with the their sodas and their Xboxes to come out and vote? Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of us, we're working, we're involved, we have families starting, we're, you know, again, I'm not speaking for a whole generation here, but you kind of get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Maybe not.
Well, I do get what you're saying, but what you used to not vote, what made you start to vote?
I think the understanding, I love the comment about the local news and things like that. It's mm-hmm. not super accessible to know and understand, you know, what our candidates are going to do, and even understanding the mechanisms in which they have to accomplished, you know, those things. Sometimes it's easier to just go, man, I really don't know. I'm going to step away from this mm-hmm. And let the people who do know do it. But we're increasingly becoming the people who are running things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So small businesses and things like that. So we do, I agree, we do need to get involved. But I'm just kind of commenting the fact that as we sit together, like for lunch and things like that, these discussions, these political discussions and issues and comments and things about democracy and how things work. I just want to encourage you guys. We are talking about these things. I promise.
Well,
smoking pot and playing video games. I promise.
Okay, Jeremy. Thanks a lot. Well, yeah. I just to walk away from that for a second. I mean, the millennial generation is a low voting, particularly a municipal election generation, but it's also a very optimistic generation. John Sotsky, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think also it's a very digital generation. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a generation that's seen disruption in other processes. So instead of brick and mortar or buying things on Amazon, instead of hailing a cab on a street, they're going on a smartphone and ordering an Uber. So I think making government more accessible and embracing digital trends to make their experience like a citizen, more like their experience like a consumer, mm-hmm. is a way that government will ultimately attract more millennial participation. Mm.
Okay. Well, we will continue our conversation. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Everyone knows that robust voter turnout is at the heart of a healthy democracy, but turnout for mayoral elections in large cities has declined over the past decade. Studies show that just 1 in 5 eligible voters actually showed up to the polls. The numbers are even lower for millennials, that is those ages 20 to 34. In an NPR story on youth voting, Jacob Bell, a 20-year-old at the University of Maryland, echoed a little bit what our earlier caller Jeremy said. He said his peers are politically aware, but not necessarily active.
I walked down the hall my freshman year. Everyone had like the State of the Union dress on. I will say, though, that there's that disconnect between finding it interesting and actually paying attention to it versus actually doing something. There's a lot of millennials that feel kind of jaded.
The Knight Foundation in June released the results of a study of the barriers and motivators for millennial voters in local elections. Still with us by phone is the Director of Strategy and Assessment at the Knight Foundation, John Sotsky. John, thanks again for joining us.
Of course.
Also political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, Aaron Weinschenk. Thanks again, Aaron.
Thank you very much for having me.
How important is the millennial vote in local elections? They're jaded. A lot of people might, you know, maybe use the phrase, we don't really matter, a vote doesn't count. John Sotsky?
Well, I think it's increasingly important with the population age 20 to 34 moving to cities at higher rates than other age groups. So as those ranks continually swell, I think it's quite important. And furthermore, really because, and as you were talking about before the break, how people's behaviors and really ingraining forms of civic engagement, including voting early on, really shapes ongoing behaviors and lifelong patterns of voting. So ensuring that people are engaged early in this process, more likely to mean that they'll continue to be engaged.
You mean like the kids who get to go with their parents to the voting booth are more likely to vote?
Yeah, it's that story that we heard a few times mm-hmm. in our conversations with millennials about how they remember going with their parents, how mom took them inside the booth when she was punching her ballot, and how that really stayed with them. So I think it's absolutely it's a learned behavior, and not everyone's experienced that. But I think still getting people and finding the things that they care about or the areas where they frequent, things like the arts and cultural events and places where they'll naturally be at, and using those opportunities as platforms for introducing them to other forms of civic engagement
uh-huh.
can be quite powerful.
Aaron Weinschenk, getting back to that, the fact that it's a learned behavior, so do we see maybe that there's a kind of an erosion process going on here where fewer people vote, fewer kids get to go to the polls with their parents, fewer kids, you know, as they grow up, they don't have that behavior learned?
Yeah, I think it certainly is some of the changes in socialization experiences. You know, we know people sit down at the dinner table with their family less now than they did in the past, or socialize with their neighbors now less than they did in the past. So I think that, you know, if the dinner table was a place where people were talking about politics with their parents and that got them interested, and we're seeing less of that now, you know, that could be part of the story, that it's just not as ingrained into daily life as maybe it was in the past.
Does the there's also many, many fewer people who identify with a particular party. Is that part and parcel of this, John Sotsky, or, you know, is it a symptom or is it a cause?
You know, there is research out there that shows that when local elections, when the candidates have a party affiliation, that there's higher turnout in those elections than in other city elections where the candidates don't have a party affiliation. I think it's a little bit of, you know, people know which team to root for, mm-hmm. so they find an easier time making a choice and turn out to make that choice. But I think ultimately there's more systemic issues that also drive discrepancies in turnouts amongst different groups. One of those big discrepancies occurs between homeowners versus renters. And I think what we see, with especially with younger folks, is they're less likely to own a home, and that's a different form of feeling vested in the community, because property taxes and all the issues that surround owning a home, including your school district and your trash pickup, are just things that get you interested. So how do we find those other points for folks who are renters but who should feel like their voice should be heard, that they should have a vested interest in the community regardless of whether they own property?
So any thoughts on what those issues are? For instance, public transportation, mass transportation, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think transportation is a big one. I think homeowner or renter, if you have kids, schools are a big issue. And affordability. You know, a lot of the reason people can't afford homes is just general cost of living issues that occur in their cities. So I think there's lots of natural opportunities in addition to some of the ballot issues that occur in local elections that can drive participation.
Let's take some calls. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a low voter turnout at local elections, particularly among millennials. If you have a question or comment for our guests, John Sotsky of the Knight Foundation and Aaron Weinshank, he's a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Comey in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Comey.
Hi, Ann. How are you guys doing?
Fine, thank you.
Basically, my comment is, you know, I love your show and I love the topic today specifically. Because millennials, I believe one of the main things, one of the main reasons why we're not involved is because we're not educated enough mm-hmm. on the issues. And I'm glad you guys mentioned local parties, because in my experience, I've found that local parties do not make the effort, the necessary efforts to kind of inform all millennials in their areas about what's going on in the local elections. We found that out because a couple of college friends and I, we started a nonprofit organization, and, you know, we've actually gotten in touch with a lot of millennials all over the country that want to discuss topics, that want to discuss issues that are happening on the local level and not necessarily the issues happening on the national level. So how do we get the local party, those chapters involved in informing millennials and getting into the, you know, development?
Because you have an unusual name, Comey, I see that you also emailed us, and you grew up in both Africa and the United States. What were the differences?
Well, the difference is the education system. Mm-hmm. I mean, growing up in Africa, you are thought of every little political thing. You know the geography, you know all the countries where all the countries are, you know who's the president of every single country in Africa. Hmm. And then moving to the United States, it's the complete opposite. You don't learn that at all. You don't study anything. I actually like the fact that in high school in the United States, my AP government teacher, he actually made us all take the U.S. citizenship test, and half of the class failed.
Yeah.
Because they don't know all the information. So how do we get all the kids involved? How do we, you know, have the education system teach these kids how to be involved or how to take action?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Comey, thank you for your call.
Thank you,
really,
Ann.
Appreciate
Thanks for having
it.
Me.
You bet. Yeah, I remember we took the citizenship test in my government class in high school as well, and it was an eye-opener even back in the olden days. Aaron Weinshank, what Comey has to say is interesting.
Yeah, I think that's right. I teach a class on American government, and I always make up a little, like, 10-question political knowledge quiz and hand it out. I don't grade it or anything like that, but it's fun to see the faces of students as they go through some of these questions. You know, the easy ones, like who's the president, everybody gets. But when you start moving down to some of the mechanics of how many people are in different chambers of Congress, or, you know, what's the unemployment rate, then they tend to struggle a little bit more. So I think that kind of knowledge about policy and about the institutions that we have is lacking among a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's something Comey says he learned in school growing up. John Sotsky, so it's part of his sort of his civic DNA, not so in the United States.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when we asked millennials who their mayor was, more than half couldn't even respond with the name of their mayor. So I wonder if that's civics upbringing or how we get even, you know, children, school-age children involved. Should also have that focused at the local level in addition to the national level.
Do you think any of it has to do with our culture of not talking about politics or religion at cocktail parties kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's not cool to talk about it. I shouldn't say cool, but it's considered a little impolite in a way.
Yeah, I think what's occurred also is that people are increasingly siloed in how they talk about it. So what's happened, and there's been some great analyses of how politics gets discussed via social media, and there's a cocoon effect where people just are attracted to those who share their opinion, and then it becomes an echo chamber of the same opinions, and people don't often have conversations that could lead to any type of disagreement. But what's lost there is actually what's really core to democracy, which is that sharing differences of opinion and ultimately finding common ground or ways of moving forward through compromise.
Hmm. Aaron Weinschenk, I mean, we're also siloed physically. We tend to live near people who think like us, too.
Yeah, that's right. There's been some interesting studies on kind of like the geographic sorting and the correlations between, you know, different attributes like income and political preferences. So there's a really good book out there by Bill Bishop on that. And some people have argued against it, but I think you do see that. Especially if you look at the political preferences of like a central city versus the suburbs, you see really big differences. You know, if you look at Milwaukee here in Wisconsin, you look at like downtown Milwaukee, really high rates of Democratic voting, and then you go to the surrounding suburbs and really high rates of Republican voting. So there does seem to be that divide in some areas, at least.
Yeah, I think Aaron's point's an important one, too. Mm-hmm. I think it has ramifications for voter turnout, because as there's been more siloed or stratification into different communities that are less balanced and more leaning towards one party or another, I think that also drives people's thought of, well, I don't have to vote because my district is already 78% Democrat or 82% Republican. Right. So I think the lack of balance in where people are living and some of the redistricting activity that's gone on has also driven a perception that each individual vote isn't as important.
And that's a particularly true in Ohio. We have a huge issue with the polarization because of how districts are drawn.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi. I wanted to talk about, because I'm a millennial, I voted in the last two presidential elections. I turned 18 just in time for the 2008 election. And I remember being very, very excited about being able to vote in a presidential election right after I turned 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually remember going to the voting booth, voting for who I wanted to win. And I remember all of the other things on the ballot, and I had no idea what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And the only topic that I had been informed about was the presidential election. And I had no idea about anything else on the ballot. And I remember being there and being a little panicked about not knowing what it was that I was voting for. And that's something that stuck with me. And I mean, I voted in the past two presidential elections, but at the same time, it's also kind of like panicky knowing that I'm going to have to vote for all of these other things that I have been completely uninformed about.
Any thoughts about that, Aaron Weinschenk?
Yeah, I think that's something that happens to a lot of people. You know, those kind of down ballot races. You know, they're really excited about the Senate or the president or the congressional district, but then they get down to, you know, city treasurer, city clerk, things like that, and They really don't have any idea who they are. There's probably no real information floating around out there about those people. I think one thing that could help is, as John mentioned, the partisan labels. Mm-hmm. I think those could be helpful cues for people if, you know, parties signal something about ideology, for example, then people could make, you know, a good choice. But without that, just going off the names and not really having much information, it's pretty difficult. And I think there are, you know, there are things that we could do to make it easier for voters to get information about those kinds of races, but a lot of cities just haven't done that yet.
Like what?
I think you could do all kinds of civic education campaigns. It's amazing to me how few like websites there are at the local level where you can go and see candidate biographies or issue positions. So I think like making it more accessible, you know, it could be like sending information to voters, whether it's a postcard or something like that, or a little booklet that has, you know, their districts and, you know, what the issues are or what the candidates are standing for. So I think in order to vote in an election, you need to have some information about it. And if you don't have it, then you can't expect people to really get too involved or get too excited.
John Sosky?
Yeah, totally. That's absolutely right. You know, we heard that voice quite a bit about confusion around what voters were looking at in terms of the ballots. And I think it's a few things. One, it's really a lack of information heading into the process about what these issues are. So folks become or feel like they're entering with that ability to actually know what they'll be voting for. And I think a lot of that education can happen through even something that's like a local guide or book that clearly explains the ballot language. Because a lot of times these things read like Beowulf, or you need to be a lawyer to actually understand whether you're voting yes means X or it means Y, because there's so many double negatives.
And we know that really, the more complicated it is, the less likely people are to vote for something.
Totally. So it's super confusing. So what Knight Foundation actually did, actually on the heels of this research, is we had a grant challenge where we invited applications to from the community about how we can better inform voters. And we are piloting a series of projects that are around eliminating some of these information asymmetries and gaps that we feel like are preventing people from making a confident vote. Because at the end of the day, what we heard across the board from these millennials was that in some ways it was a responsible attitude. They said, I don't know enough about the issues to feel like I can make an informed vote, and thus I don't vote. So how do we get at that information?
Mm-hmm. Marjorie, did you change your behavior? Did you start to prepare better when it came to voting time?
I found it very hard not only to find information about who was running and what the issues were, but even finding where it was that I was needing to go vote or when the elections were. I'd hear things about the elections are coming up, but I didn't know which elections they were, what was going to be on the ballot, where I needed to go to vote. And it was just very difficult for me to even find that kind of information.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thank you.
And thanks also to John Sosky, Director of Strategy and Assessment at the Knight Foundation. Really appreciate your time today, John.
Thank you, Ann.
And Aaron Weinschenk, political scientist at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Thanks to you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll continue our conversation coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio boasts 8 million registered voters, but fewer than half, about 3 million, voted in last year's gubernatorial race. That's the lowest turnout since 1978 when the Secretary of State's office started to track voter numbers. Americans are busy. They're distracted. Ultimately, they don't care enough. Those are some of the reasons. And the younger they get, the less likely by far they are to vote in local elections. But as we have learned from our callers and from political scientists we've been talking to, it's not that they don't care. It's they don't tend to have not enough information to either care or to know who they're voting for or what they're voting for when it comes to the ballot box. Joining us now is Ohio State University political scientist Paul Beck. Welcome as always, Paul.
Good to be with you, Ann.
And by phone, the executive director at the League of Women Voters of Ohio, Carrie Davis. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
In terms of actual numbers of voters, last year brought out the fewest in a gubernatorial election since 1978, the third fewest since 1954. In Franklin County, only 36% of those eligible actually voted. And Carrie Davis, doesn't the problem begin with the fact that we're only talking about people who are registered to vote? Those numbers are not good either.
Absolutely, Anne. We need to do more. And studies have shown over and over the most important thing we can do to boost voter registration and voter participation is simply to ask people. So we need to ask our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, have you voted? Come with me to the polls and vote.
Yeah, we know, Paul Beck, that that must work because, you know, Carrie Davis says so, and I believe her. We get the I voted stickers when we do vote. We wear them proudly. So there is that kind of a thing. But I mentioned earlier in the other segment, we also have this culture of thinking that talking about politics and religion, I'm just using those, is impolite in social circumstance situations.
I think there is some of that. What we need to remember is that in many families, voting is a social act. You go to the polls with a husband or a wife or with a son or daughter. We know that people that are in intact families who do not live alone are much more likely to vote than those who are not. We know that voting falls off among the elderly once a spouse is deceased and there's no one to accompany you to the polls. So that's one factor. The other thing I think to remember to put all of this into a broader perspective is that we have the lowest rates of turnout in the Democratic world. It hasn't always been that way. Mm-hmm. A century ago, local elections often attracted more voters than national elections. Now it's just the reverse. We have a lot of elections. Voters are attracted to visible competitive contests. When there isn't a visible competitive contest, a lot of them tend to stay home.
What about the increase in issues on the ballot?
Well, I think, again, turnout falls off as you move down the ballot to the issues because issues take a lot of study. You read them at the polling place. They're complicated. Many voters will pass over them and not vote. Same is true of judicial contests. They don't really know the judicial contests very well. So they may vote for governor or they may vote for senator. They certainly will vote for president, but they will skip the contests that are farther down the ballot.
Carrie Davis, there's so much going on here. There's the issues of the news and the newspapers in particular, how much that's changed. There's the digital generation, kind of the digital natives, and a lot of millennials fall into that category as well. There's the proliferation of issues on the ballot. There is a lot less civics being taught in schools. Where do you even begin?
Well, the best place to start is by finding out just what's on your ballot before you go to vote. If the first time you've looked at your ballot is when you go into the voting booth on election day, it's too late to do your homework. And it doesn't take a very long time. You can spend as much or as little time as you want studying it, but look at your ballot ahead of time. And thanks to technology, it's getting easier and easier. On Franklin County, you can look up your sample ballot and see what races are there, who the candidates are, what the issues are. You can figure out how you're going to vote before you even go to the polls or before you get your absentee ballot. That makes it a lot easier. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the local league voter information bulletin will be run in this Sunday's Dispatch. So that's also a great place to go to find out more about what's going to be on your ballot in your neighborhood this year.
But if you're not a paper reader of the Dispatch and you're not subscribed online, you can't get to it.
Well, that's one place you can get to mm-hmm. it. There are also copies available in local libraries. And for the digital generation, you can go to vote411.org and look up your sample ballot there as well.
Vote411.org.
Yes.
Amber from Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Amber.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Hi, so I just wanted to briefly call in because I have been listening to all of the comments and concerns. And me being 25, I actually went to a school in Columbus by Gehanna Lincoln. If anybody knows about Gehanna Lincoln, they know that that is a very strategic school. and learning about things. We learned about different electors and presidency, and they were very big on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like within our community today, it's so corrupt that when you actually decide to go vote for a president, you have to see the backlash that we get from it. So when it starts to become to a point that you feel like you're voting for someone and then changes are not happening or different things are taking forth, it honestly makes you want to stand back and not vote.
Well, what about mm-hmm. local elections?
Even within local elections, I don't feel that. I mean, you can see some signs that are put up. You can even have newspapers, but now it's 2015. People aren't really looking at newspapers like they are on the media.
Mm-hmm.
And then the media has so much information, sometimes it's hard for you to obtain specific about what's going on locally.
Mm-hmm.
You can see these signs, but again, it all comes back to me as being 25 years old to how corrupt it is and what they want you to know from what you mm-hmm. actually know.
Okay.
It's a scary thing.
Yeah. Well, Amber, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. I'm going to go to Josh now in Westerville. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how are you? I'd just like to touch on two things that you were talking about a little earlier. One of them kind of has to do with, millennials migrating to cities. I would also like to say that, as a millennial, I don't vote in local elections because the area that I'm from, we just have, an overabundance of elderly who kind of, put their issues to the forefront, and they don't affect me one way or the other. So I have no reason to show up and voice an opinion on either side. And then the next thing is because I don't vote, I'm touching on consumerism. I just decided it's better for me to, give money to, conservation funds and things like that that I believe in, and let them deal with the bureaucracy on that end, because on a local level, I just don't see the point in participating.
That's really interesting. Josh, thank you so much for your call. I think that's interesting, Paul Beck, that he says, he doesn't really understand all everything that's going on. He doesn't think it affects him otherwise. And so he goes and gives his money. So he's got money. He's given it to another group to do his bidding for him.
Well, it's another aspect of democracy. It's mm-hmm. an interest group democracy. We decry that in some ways.
Yeah.
We don't like lobbyists. On the other hand, lobbyists play an increasingly important role in our politics. The other thing to add here is that turnout rates fluctuate a lot. We had in the primary in May a turnout rate that some estimated to be about 9% of the people who could vote.
Right.
In 2013, another odd year primary, the turnout rate in Franklin County was 4.5%. So people don't participate in primaries largely because most Ohioans don't really have a party.
And it used to take my breath away when only 24 or 25% voted. I mean, literally, it took
yes.
my breath away. I thought that was horrendous. And now we're down to single digits. And we're, it seems like, Kerry Davis, quickly approaching zero.
Frighteningly, yes. And it's really, you're giving away your own power when you choose not to vote. Election time is the one time every one of us is equal, regardless of where we come from or how much money we have. Everyone's vote counts the same. And I'd argue that really you have much more of an impact in those local races where it is a lower turnout and where you're voting for people that really affect every aspect of our communities, our schools, our streets, our neighborhoods, our parks, our tax dollars. This is the time to really have an impact on what you think the direction of your community is going.
We have an email from Paloma. She says, one of your callers makes a great point. Where can we go to get information on what will be on the ballot come November? Not just candidates, but everything else. I have heard of the League of Women Voters, but is there anything else your guests can recommend, specifically websites? And the League of Women Voters is a really big deal, Kerry Davis. And you mentioned vote411.org. Do you have a mobile-friendly app? Do you have a mobile-friendly website? Is there something that maybe speaks a little bit more directly to the millennial and particularly the digital native generation?
Absolutely. And that's why Vote 411 was developed by the League, specifically so that we would have this mobile-friendly environment for millennials walking around doing all of their banking and all of their transactions in life on their iPhone or tablets or other portable devices. Vote411.org is mobile-friendly. And it's a great way. All you have to do is plug in your address, your zip code. You can find exactly who and what's on your ballot. You can save a sample ballot, so if you make up your mind on who you want to vote for, You don't have to go look for it again. It's saved right there for you. And it's really making it much more convenient. So whether you're going to early voting or on election day, it's right there in the palm of your hand.
Email from Brad in Columbus, who writes, I know it's important to vote in the local elections, but in my opinion, it's pretty inconsequential who the new city treasurer might be or who the recorder is. If there's nothing really glamorous like the marijuana issue, you stay home. That leads to a group of incumbents simply holding onto their spots. And I think he makes a really good point, Paul Beck. Not that I'm down on the city treasurer or the recorder or any of that, but what does it matter? Why can't we focus more on executive type positions and let them, the buck, you know, rest with them in the end?
I think we would be better off if there weren't so much clutter, I'll call it, on the ballot of contests that in some ways are inconsequential in terms of policy.
They mattered more when there were machines running city government.
That's correct. That's correct. There was a big revolution in this country in the 1820s where we moved all of these contests onto the ballot, whereas in the past they had been just appointed. And maybe we need to move back to that, because even though there is more information out there available for voters, the information doesn't help us much when it comes to treasurer. Mm-hmm. Different candidates for treasurer don't offer to do the job in a very different way from each other. So I think that if some of that clutter were removed, maybe if we had fewer elections but more consequential elections, turnout would improve. It gets into the 60s. At the presidential level, single digits.
That's of eligible voters, meaning registered.
That's of the voting eligible population.
Okay.
So
okay.
Go beyond registered.
Okay. All right.
It goes down to single digits when you talk about party primaries and some local elections.
What do you think, Kerry Davis? Is too much clutter on the ballot, people that we don't for jobs that we don't really understand or care about?
Well, it's true that ballots keep getting longer and longer, and in some states, like California, they're even longer still than they are here in Ohio, and that's frequently referred to as ballot fatigue. Voters get tired. They vote for the races they know at the top of the ballot, and then they decide to walk away and not vote for the rest, and that's happening more and more often, sadly. But one point I'd like to make is all the races that get the attention, president, governor, U.S. senator, members of Congress, those top-of-the-ticket races that we pay attention to, almost all of those officials held lower office first. They didn't start off running for president in most cases. They held other jobs. So all of these local races are really the pipeline for these future office holders that voters pay more attention to.
I think that's a really, really great point, Kerry Davis. As far as how to clean up the ballot. I mean, one person suggested that perhaps you put everything on the same ballot so that you get that voter turnout for the national elections, and then it might reflect higher participation on the lower tickets. But there's already, I mean, one of the main ways people do get information is from advertising on television, and that's already super crowded and horrible. Kerry Davis?
Absolutely. And that brings up the broader subject of how much money has an influence on politics. People pay attention to the races they hear about, and they hear about races because they have money to advertise on television and the internet and the radio. Most candidates who are running for office, especially at the local level, most ballot issues, don't have that much money to advertise and get their name out and their message out. And that's why it really becomes a little bit more work for the voter to find out what's on their ballot and how to make up their mind. And it raises this very interesting question about, you know, do we really want people who have the ability to spend large amounts of money to be steering our election?
Paul Beck, I mean, some people said, well, they should have put the marijuana issue on next year when it's a national turnout, right? But then they would have to raise $50 million to
They make a calculation of which election advantages them more.
Right.
And I think the hope on the part of the supporters of Issue 3 is that in a lower turnout election, maybe a very low turnout election, they could mobilize people who care about legalization of marijuana, and those people are not going to be drowned out by a larger electorate. Whether that happens or not, we'll see.
We shall see. Kerry Davis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anne.
Kerry Davis, she's the executive director at the League of Women Voters of Ohio. And Paul Beck, as always, thanks to you.
Thank you, Ann.
Paul Beck, he's a political scientist at Ohio State University. Thanks for all the great calls and comments today, and thanks for listening. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Shia Linnott, All Sides interns, Trent Lammers, Ryan McFadden, and Sydney Schaefer, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.